We should take inspiration from the sun and work constantly for the benefit of mankind so that peace and prosperity prevails everywhere, says the Samaveda, which is the foremost and shortest among the Vedas. The Samaveda is compiled exclusively of ritual application and it's a collection of melodies and chants. The major theme of this Veda can be regarded as worship and devotion. Hello, my name is Malati and I'm the host of the show The Impressive Empress. After a rather long, unexpected break, I'm so happy to be back talking to you all through this podcast. Here I am with yet another speaker on this show. It gives me immense pleasure to talk to these women leaders who have started a humble journey and have gone a long way to break many myths and beliefs to impact the society in a very positive way. The idea behind this podcast is to understand what it takes a woman to become such a leader, to understand the journey from within, the journey to becoming a female leader with a higher purpose. Our guest for the day is Ms. Prema Mysore, a highly motivated leader dedicated as an international ambassador and advocate for Rishi tradition based on the Vedas and Vedic literatures. She loves to travel and propagate the universal, eternal and all-encompassing messages of the Rishi tradition to humankind all over the world. Prema considers herself to be very fortunate to have had the opportunity to be an educator and proponent of Rishi's tradition for divine life. She is considered as a well-known Rishi care expert and a Rishi yoga master, and she teaches them online, offline, and also propagates it globally. She is a recipient of the Mahatma Gandhi Leadership Award at the House of Commons, United Kingdom in the year 2019. You can read more about Prema's career and her achievements on our website www.bogya.online. I'm extremely delighted to have Prema on the show talking to me about her experiences. Listen on to know what makes Prema the Impressive Empress. Namaste, Prema ji.
Namaste, Mruti ji.
So, a very warm welcome to our podcast, The Impressive Empress. I'm so glad that we are able to connect together today. For me personally, it's been a long break, and I'm extremely delighted to be talking to you today about what you have done and your journey from within. This is what this podcast is focusing, and I'm waiting to hear all about it from you. Before we jump into the topics as such, I would like you to briefly introduce yourself.
Sure. Again, Namaste. And Maltiji, thank you so much for this wonderful time together. And I know we had several glitches, but I'm very glad to be here and share my journey within and without. It's about life and about living. So the journey within is about life and the journey without is about living. So just a brief introduction. As you already mentioned, my name, Prema Mysore, and my husband, Pratap Mysore, hails from Bangalore, India, and I'm originally from Mumbai. And after marriage, I left Mumbai 41 years ago and lived in Baroda, Gujarat. And after having lived there for 7 years, we immigrated to the United States. So this has been now around 36th or 37th year. I lose count of that. But now, after 36 some years in the United States, I would like to say that I have lived and continue to live a very fulfilled and a content life, both personally and professionally. First of all, a little background about myself would be helpful to bring the whole conversation in context. I come from a Fauji, an army family. My father was a captain in the Indian Army and served the 1962 Indochina and the 1965 Indo-Pakistan Wars. He was very active on duty. Then comes along my uncle, who was a retired wing commander in the Indian Air Force, had a very successful life as a air commodore. Then is my brother, who is a retired commodore from the Indian Navy. So you can see that I'm very, very influenced with all the three forces in being in the family. And that sense of patriotism, I think, oozes from every cell in my body, if I may say so. So that is why it has drawn me to what I am doing today. So this is a little bit of a context, but I think it fits well in what I'm just going to share with you. So today, I am a grandmother to two wonderful grandkids, granddaughters, who are 7 and 3. And I have been married for 41 years now and lived here in Minnesota for more than half of my life, I can say. So Minnesota is now home, and two beautiful children, one son-in-law and a daughter-in-law, very wonderful family. I come from a family of 3 daughters. I do not have any brothers. I have an older sister and a younger sister. They both reside in Bangalore. But I am married into a very large family. When I say large, I mean my husband has 8 siblings. They are 8 boys and 1 sister. And I rank 9th in that order. And the reason I want to bring it up is that not only my sisters, my brothers-in-law, and my side of the family, but I am very, very blessed to have a wonderful in-laws side of the family from whom I have drawn a lot of inspiration, and I continue to learn from them, starting from my mother-in-law, who at the age of 79 immigrated to the United States and lived a very fulfilled life until the age of 96, when she passed away here in Boston. So we amongst our sisters-in-law had decided that, you know, she will be taken utmost care of until her last breath. And, you know, as a family, I feel very blessed, very fortunate to have had the opportunity to have served my mother-in-law. A very, very dynamic woman. And as she still lived with me, I have drawn so much of inspiration, the courage, resilience, integrity, and the art of letting go that is so difficult for anybody. But that was the first thing that I noticed about my mother-in-law that I learned from her was, you know, to let go. She walked into our house during her first visit, and the first thing that she told me was, look, I have fulfilled my responsibilities. I have lived my life. I have reigned over my kingdom in my house. Now I am in your house, and you rule the kingdom here, and you lay the laws, and I follow your laws. Can you imagine what wisdom? You know, from a 79-year-old mother-in-law who had never stepped out of the kitchen for 60 years of her life. And then she comes here, and this was the first sentence that she told me. And to this day, I wish and I pray that I can follow her footsteps in that sense. You know, having that wisdom, the viveka, to let go at the right point of time, to draw the line and say, you know, this is it. Now I'm here. and I obey your rules and laws. Not that I was laying down any rules or laws, but it was her attitude, you know, of adapting, adopting, and living in a culture that was so foreign to her. My mother has been a great source of inspiration for me. A very, very courageous lady, very resilient, very responsible, very loving. It applies to both the women, the two strong women that I have drawn inspiration from, my mother-in-law and my mother. My mother was legally blind for more than 30 years of her life because of her diabetes. But till her last breath, she was such a strong woman, so powerful from within. Nobody could ever even imagine that she was legally blind. She carried herself so confidently, so courageously, you know, nobody believed that she couldn't see. That's where I have drawn a lot of courage and confidence from my mother. And all her life she has served selflessly, and that applies to my mother-in-law always. Without having any expectations, she was both of them were Mother Annapurneshwari's incarnate. Everybody that came to the home was fed sumptuously, and they were taken very well care of, respected. That's where I learned respect is very important. Every human being needs to be respected, no matter what, where they come from. This is the lessons of respect I learned from them. So this is a little bit of a background. And after having had a career, and you know, that's besides the point. But today I am in a position where, after having completely retired and taken a hiatus for about 7 to 8 years, and with a lot of support and encouragement from my families, both sides of the families, and especially my husband, I'm here now batting a second innings with a couple of entities that we have formed in India, Rishipat International Foundation, which is a foundation with a vision to reestablish the multifaceted, rich Rishi tradition globally. And this is based totally on the Vedas and the Vedic literature, teachings of the Vedas and Vedic literature for life and for living. And we have several other small entities that support our vision and mission. And this keeps me busy now. And this takes me back to India also, where now I spend 6 to 7 months in Bangalore, in India, travel, of course. And then the rest of the year, I'm here in the United States. And all this is because of the wonderful support I get from my family, my children, my grandchildren, my husband, my in-laws, everyone. So that's a little brief description about me. Not so brief, but...
Yes, yes, absolutely. I mean, you have set the background so beautifully. And here we are going to be talking about your life journey from within. Though it's a leadership talk show, we are not going to be focusing much on the work that you have carried out, how you are a leader and things like that, but more about how you became the person that you are to be. And you have so beautifully said that you have drawn a lot of inspiration from your mother and your mother-in-law, the courage, the confidence, the resilience, and most importantly, the attitude of let go. I mean, I think that's very, very important, especially in today's times. It's a very wonderful skill. You also said you are a mother of two kids and also a grandmother now. How does this all fit in? How do you manage your family on the one side, and then now with the frequent travels, it must not be.
You know, life is not easy, but it is good. As long as there is a purpose in life, you know, once there is a purpose that is larger than oneself, and we actively get engaged in that, you know, immersed in that, breathe it day and night, it is amazing how the universe conspires to make everything happen smoothly and very efficiently and effectively. Okay. Speaking about the balance, you know, as a mother, I have fulfilled my responsibilities. As I said, both my children are married, my daughter and my son are both married. As a wife, I have supported, and I think my husband also feels the same. We agree on this. I have supported his career throughout until his retirement. As a daughter, I had the wonderful opportunity to take care of my mother till she breathed her last. And as a daughter-in-law, I had an opportunity to serve my mother-in-law at her age that she was. And as a sister, I'm always there for both my sisters whenever they need me. And for the rest of my in-law side of the family also, I'm always there. And I always tell them, I can be in any part of the world. I'm just a phone call away and I'm accessible. Like, pick up the phone, call me, I'll be there. Okay. And that applies to my friends and also the community, the extended family here in Minnesota that has become, you know, my family now, our family. People that we have grown up with, some of my friends for 35, 36 years. I think they know me in and out. They stand by me, they support me. And how amazing is that when my friends, they call me in India when I'm there and they say, Prema, you stay there. You do what you're supposed to do and what you like to do and what you're passionate about. Don't worry about Pratap, we are here. We'll take care of him. And sure enough, they do. When I'm not here, there's never a day he goes hungry, even though he's an excellent cook, but everybody chips in. I think that's a huge, huge blessing. People just chip in, they bring him food, they call him, they check on him, they make sure he's taken care of, you know, and they make sure he's invited to all the pujas and the events. He's never left out, and so are my children and grandchildren. So, like I said, you know, these are all the blessings that I'm very, very fortunate to enjoy. You know, our Shastra says there are three runas or debts. It is very difficult to pay it back. In the sense, it is not about, you know, tit for tat. Not, it's not that. But it is a gratitude. You know, how can we ever repay, you know, Matra Runa, a mother who carries the child in her womb for 9 months, and we are all parents now, and we know what a mother goes through. So our Shastra says, Pitra Runa, of our parents, you know, very, very, very significant and very important to repay, which means we take care of them when they need us, you know. Second, Devarina, all these elements, the forces in the nature that continue to give us unconditionally. No tree eats its own fruit. No river drinks its own water. Right? The sun shines unconditionally. Doesn't matter where. The rose gives its fragrance to everybody, no matter who. A saint or a sinner, no matter who. Right? We can never repay nature. For these are the devatas. We can never repay them. The third is the Rishi Runa. Our rishis who have left their legacy, the teachings, the wisdom in service of the entire humanity. It's not about you know, which nationality, creed, caste, religion, etc. It transcends all of that. It is beyond all of that. It is for the entire humankind, for the entire mankind. So this is what the Shastra says, that as a human being, this is our purpose. We have to work towards repaying or expressing our thankfulness and gratitude. When I say repay, not, you know, like I said, it's not a business transaction. So when I look at it, you know, I'm like, how fortunate can I be, you know, that got the opportunity to take care of both mothers, my biological mother and my mother-in-law. Second, in terms of Devrina, you know, we can take care of the animals, the birds, the insects. We have a bird feeder. You don't have to do some magnificent projects, you know. No, it is in our daily life. How do we incorporate these principles, right? And also feeding the animals. We had a pet dog. We took care of her very well. So these are simple things that we need to do, and which is what I have been practicing. And lastly is the Rishi Runa, which is where Rishipat comes in. That is the, you know, the impetus or the force that propelled to get this foundation organized and structured and incorporated as a part of our Rishi Yajna or Rishi Runa. So looking at all of these runas, and in this process of expressing gratitude, it feels like, you know, a balance has been established. It has all been just balanced very beautifully, with effortlessly, you know, without any effort. My children are supportive. They know mom is busy. They value my time. They respect my time, you know, and they understand the work that I do and how important it is for me. So when I'm back in India, we have video calls, we have phone calls, you know, talk to the grandkids. When I'm back here, of course, I'm the mom and the grandma. So even like today, I've already cooked a meal, breakfast, lunch, everything packed up so that my husband's going to take it over there. And, you know, so that part of the family and that kind, that need, I don't think there is any lack of or deprivation over there. And when it comes to an understanding between me and my husband, he stands behind me, he stands beside me, he stands ahead of me, and he continuously supports the work that I do. And he's my biggest advocate, if I may say so. You know, and without his support, I don't think I could have been doing what I'm doing today. So in a sense, I think it has all worked out very well, and intend to continue to do this as long as I physically can, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, I can continue to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, very beautiful. I should say that being able to do your duties and also take care of your family. You started off as a chartered accountant, and then you became an IT professional, been busy as for about 35 plus years, traveling all over India and USA, working with various Fortune 500 companies. Mm-hmm. That's a different kind of life. And how did you decide to quit all of this one fine day and take up this social activity based on the Rishi tradition?
Yes. On hindsight, I think I have always been doing all of this in spite of my professional career. So it's not like these are two different segments of my life or two different aspects. It was all parallelly happening at the same time. So even as a professional woman working in corporate America, and yet at the same time, very socially active in the community in Minnesota, you know, trying to keep up with our traditions and our values and instilling them in our community and in our children. You know, it was a parallel track. So the point is, I gave up my career, and I had already in my mind somewhere preset, you know, a number. And I said, once I hit this age, I'm going to step out. I'm going to step out of the rat race. That's it. And I don't know where I got this number from, but it was in my head. And sure enough, at that point of time, the circumstances were such that, you know, it required, my mother required full-time care. And I was actually working on a very busy SAP implementation project, worldwide implementation. And, you know, the rollout was all scheduled. And I was looking for an appropriate time when I could actually quit so that I don't put my client or my company and my colleagues, you know, at jeopardy at the cost of the timeline. So at a very opportune time, I quit because I wanted to take care of my mother. That was a promise I had made to her that if and when needed, I will even quit my job and come and take care of you. And I said, you know, I can always find another job. I can always come back. I can find another job. But mother, I only have one. And that's when I just hung up the hat, if I may say, and I left for India. Sure enough, when I go to India, there I meet such wonderful, wonderful gurus. I have had many, many, many gurus in my life from a very young age, for that matter. And after quitting my job, I think it was my mother's blessings that I met wonderful gurus who imparted the highest spiritual knowledge and wisdom to me. And during the time when I was caring for her, I also came across a teacher who taught me all about healing and healing modalities. And that kind of set my life in a very different direction. And after that, it is no turning back. And it has been a journey of just, you know, moving into the whole ocean of the Vedas and the Vedic literature. And about a few years ago, I met this wonderful Vedic scholar, Acharya Dr. Mahesh Anand Vidyalankar, who is now teaching me the wisdom of the Vedas and the teachings of various rishis. So without even knowing the background, without even knowing what Vedas were about, what the wisdom was about, but now when I look back, it seems like, you know, somehow I have completely followed the Varnashramas, you know, the Brahmacharya, Grahastha, Vanaprastha, and the Sannyasa. Somehow that number that I had in my mind that I have to quit my job, it fits like a glove with the Varnashrama that our rishis have described. And I'm like, wow, is that so? I didn't even know that, you know. So our tradition says, the Rishi tradition says that, you know, after a certain point, it is time to give back, to let go, charity. Okay. And like I said, I had no idea about all of this until, you know, the past decade when I have started learning that now I'm realizing that, you know, somehow there was a guiding light, a guiding force that walked me through life and, you know, all along, and has brought me to this point that I'm extremely, extremely grateful. And the other thing is, you know, I have always kept my mind open to learn. I'll just give you a couple instances, you know, of such pure wisdom that comes from a very pure heart. It just, it lives and, mark, you know, in a consciousness. So one woman that was caring for my mother in Rangadurai Hospital in Bangalore. It's a hospital for cancer. So she was diagnosed with esophageal cancer. So this lady, she was a, like they call, you know, somebody who was bathing her and attending to her. Very pleasant woman. You know, never complained, always smiling and served like My mother was the queen of England. I mean, the queen of some territory, you know, she was always at her beck and call. And I was so impressed. I said, you know, would you like to come and take care of my mother at home? You know, we will pay you for whatever, for your services. You know, the response that she gave me was so beautiful. And that was a lesson, you know, in credibility, compassion, commitment, integrity. She looked at me, she smiled, and she said, you know, I love your mother very much. As long as she's in the hospital, I'll take very good care of her. But you know what? Just like your mother, there are so many other mothers also who come here. If I come to your house, I will only take care of your mother. But if I stay here, I can take care of so many other mothers, isn't it? No, you know, I can never forget her words. And the disposition with which she said it, with all sincerity, you know, with that, with an attitude of serving, was a beautiful lesson I learned from her, you know, to serve selflessly, with integrity, with compassion, with care, you know, with resilience, with a smile, with no expectations, unconditional love. So many, many such people who have come in my life and have enriched my life and feel very fulfilled and content.
That's really incredible. I mean, I've also had quite a few such experiences where people do leave an indelible mark and it stays with us forever. And it also impacts us so much so that we are ready to give back to the society.
Mm-hmm.
That's one amazing experience that you have shared. And it does, I'm sure it definitely makes one feel more caring, more connected, more compassionate. But you also mentioned that you learned a lot about healing. So you also mentioned in your profile about the marma therapy, the touch therapy, the prana healing, healing with water, so many different kinds of healing methodologies. And you also developed this energy management system along with, you mentioned Acharya, Dr. Mahesh Ananda Vidyalankar. But this also makes me wonder about trust, you know. Someone who works on the physical, the emotional, the mental, the social, and the spiritual sheets of people, how do you ensure that one feels comfortable to share their personal experiences and maybe, you know, sometimes sensitive information? How do you convey to them that you're dependable and
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really very good question. You know, first of all, to be trustworthy, one has to trust others. It's a two-way, right? Just in as much as anybody has apprehensions about sharing their personal, you know, the panchakoshas, you know, as you just mentioned, you know, the information, you know. It's on the other side, even I also have to trust that everything is being shared with me. Okay. So as a professional and as a healer, that's the one of the first things that people feel, that energy of care, compassion, sincerity, integrity, kindness, you know, once they come in my presence and they sit with me for a session and I don't even have to say anything, you know, they just open up. I think that connectedness is there, you know, the empathy is there, because having gone through life and many ups and downs personally, you know, my daughter calls it intuitive kindness. So I think it is come from within, you know, intuitively, that empathy, because I've personally gone through physically at a physical level and several planes, you know, a lot of pain. However, all of those experiences have sculpted me to be a very empathetic healer. And people have that confidence that the information they share with me only goes with me to the grave. Even my husband has no clue, because he will be sitting here watching TV. And when people come here in Minnesota, I have a healing room and we go downstairs. And when they come back up, you know, they come and fall at his feet. He's like, what? They're like, you know, thank you for allowing her to do what she's doing. And in all honesty, I have to say, I have to really give a lot of kudos to my husband. Never, ever has he ever asked, you know, why did they come? What was their problem? What was their issue? And nor do I ever discuss about it with him, each of my sadhakas that come here. Even when I was a chartered accountant, I was a CPA, and I was doing tax work, and you know, a lot of people from the community, I was filing their tax returns. They knew that the information, the financial information they shared with me, would absolutely be private and confidential. And I had already built that trust in the community here, you know, that they could come and share their finances. My husband to this day doesn't know who made how much money, ever. Those were very, very confidential, very confidential. And I think ethically also, you know, when somebody comes in so much pain, whether it is financial, physical, mental, emotional, you know, and they are so vulnerable, it behooves for me, you know, to maintain that ultimate trust and confidence. And it is a huge responsibility, let me tell you, because these are the people I sit, walk, live, breathe with, you know, in the community, and nobody knows who has come for a healing session for what problem. Nobody knows. And they'll all be sitting right next to each other, and they have no clue. So that's the standard of confidentiality and trust that is required, you know, as a healer and as a professional in any profession for that matter. And it has to be earned. It cannot be commanded. It has to be earned. It has to be earned through our kaya, vacha, and manasa. Thoughts, words, and actions. You know, a commitment is a commitment is a commitment, no matter what. So, communication, very important. Confidence, extremely important. These are all the qualities that are required of anybody to be a good leader. And I believe each one of us is empowered and has the potential to be the leader. And each one of us innately have all these qualities. It's just a matter of acknowledging it, accepting it, and drawing it from within. We all have it. Each and every person has it. And in addition to that, we all have something very unique about us that the Creator has made and given us. That is the purpose of our life. Meaning of our life is to find that uniqueness that each one of us have, and the purpose is to give it away.
Amazing. This is truly wonderful that you're mentioning this here, because I strongly believe that it is a myth to say that leaders are born. I mean, it's totally a myth. And I do believe that one can become a leader if one identifies one's uniqueness, like you beautifully mentioned, and one can unleash that potential.
Yes.
It's just limitless what one can do to this world, or what one can do to the society to make it more lovable and sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
I also understand it's not so easy to identify one's uniqueness. What mm-hmm. can you probably share a few, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 steps or tips that one can take up as a daily practice to yes. identify these?
Yes. So there are a few sutras, if I may say, that I have lived and I continue to live my life. First and foremost is, you know, there's no life without problem. There's no problem without solution. Okay? If there was no solution, no options, then it would not be a problem at all to begin with. And there is not one single person on this face of this earth that can come up and say, I have no problems, or my life, I've never had problems, right? That's what life is about. It's challenging. Even there's ups and there are downs. And they're all meant to be there for us to learn a lesson. So we just draw the lesson from our experience and move on. So first thing is, you know, everybody is going through some challenge or the other. Let us be kind. Let us be gentle. Let us be caring towards each other. Let us work, you know, with compassion, because we don't know what the other person sitting across from us, you know, in any situation, anywhere for that matter, what they are going through. We just don't know. You know, everybody has their own share to deal with. So I feel it is very, very important, you know, to show, to not to show, but to be compassionate, caring, kind, and respectful. Very important. Secondly, you know, nothing is forever. I've understood this, that everything is transient. Everything is impermanent. Things will come, things will go. You know, it's like the stock market. One day is up and one day is down. It doesn't matter. You know, if it is down, it will go up. If it is up, it will come down. That's the nature. That's the cycle that we live in. So we need to be cognizant of that. If you're going through a difficult time, that will also pass. If you're having a great time and having a lot of fun, that will also pass. You know, to have an equanimity in every situation. Easier said than done, but it can be done. It can be practiced, for sure, right? Thirdly, I say, learn something new every single day. I like to learn something new every day. It could be as simple as a tip that I might pick up. For example, yesterday, for the first time, I heard this from my daughter, intuitive kindness. I had never heard about it. I heard from her intuitive kindness. And I said, wow, you know, I really had not heard that. So I learned something new. And I say, every day we need to make it a habit to learn something new and to do an act of kindness, a random act of kindness. These things can be taught. These things can be learned. Some of it is learned behavior also. You know, so we can do that. Lastly, but not the least, I would say that we need to be very, very confident of ourselves. Because there's no such thing as doing right or doing wrong. Every experience, every action is a teacher that is there to impart the lessons of life. So there's nothing wrong or there's nothing right. There's no success, there's no failure. It is all a lesson to be learned and to be lived. Not just have it up in the head, but it has to be lived in life to have a very meaningful and a content and a fulfilled life. Yeah. And it can be done.
Very true, yeah. Very true. I mean, it's all boiling down to having a very certain set of mindsets, I would say, that help us along the way. If I have understood you very clearly, you were talking mm-hmm. about having a very caring mindset, mm-hmm. having a growth mindset, and also a reflective mindset, all coming down to the understanding the interconnectedness of this whole world. Who you are, what you do, what you want to be, and what legacy you want to leave behind is all some way or the other dependent on the mindsets that we carry and how we align with our core purpose. And, mm-hmm. You have very beautifully brought it out, and thanks for sharing this. Mm-hmm. I would also like to ask you about this situation that we are in today. You know, the pandemic must have taught everyone mm-hmm. something or the other, and different ways and different skills with which we can deal with this. This is terminology called VUCA. So we already have it's called a disruptive, volatile, uncertain, complex, ambiguous, and diverse times. During these days, like we had it for a little over 24 months, and I think we are also having it, we are still seeing some very uncertain situations in some parts of the world, not just to COVID, but also we have the war going on. How have you managed your whatever spiritual practice that you're doing and advocating the divine life, the universal peace, about the holistic well-being? How did you manage your pain? How did your leadership style change during these times, as a woman especially?
Yes. You know, it repeats itself. This is not the first pandemic, nor will this be the last pandemic. If you look back, we have had several pandemics. So the question is, what have we learned from the past experiences? Wars, we know, they've always been there. It's not just a matter of, this decade or this century. You know, for thousands of years, it has been there, and it will be there in the future also. So how do we deal with all of this? First of all, letting go of the fear of uncertainty. We have two fears that we all live by, I think, in my mind. I don't want to generalize it, but typically from all my studies and all my research and all of my work that I have done, I have seen two fears that people, we tend to hold on to is fear of death and fear of uncertainty. This is where spiritual knowledge and spiritual wisdom comes in very handy. Knowing, understanding, assimilating, and living it, living the wisdom that this body, this mind, this intellect is all part of the prakriti or the existence. It is inert. What is the consciousness that is there, or the chetana, or the prajna, or the awareness? That is the substratum of life that keeps it going. Once that wisdom dawns, then all of these things becomes a part that one can just witness and say, yes, it is there, we acknowledge it. But knowing fully well, this is not the first and this is not the last. So transcending that fear is very, very important. And this is where some of the practices, some of the techniques that our rishis have given us, it really helps. After all, where are all these fears and uncertainties, apprehensions? Where are they? They're in the mind, isn't it? It's in the mind. And when we harbor it for an extended period of time, it can manifest on the physical body in the form of dis-ease, discomfort, imbalances. So very important is to know our own mind, our own body, our own intellect. This is the time to go within and to learn about our own body-mind complex, what we have. This is an instrument, this is a device that has been given to us, a very beautiful gift that has to be cherished and taken care of, nourished and nurtured, so that we get to the core of the existence, we get to the core of this living and realize or understand who we really are, what is our true identity. Once we get to that place, you know, then everything becomes a part of the show, a show that must be watched and not to get entangled into it. And the show will go on forever. That is what is called as creation. It is for us to enjoy, to know the impermanence about it, and also to realize the true identity. So I'll give a simple equation, a very simple formula that Maharishi Patanjali in his Yoga Sutras, in the first pada, Samadhi Pada, 1.33, he talks about Maitri, Karuna, Mudita, Upeksha. Okay, what is that? Maitri, Karuna, Mudita, and Upeksha. Friendliness, love, kindness, caring, Maitri. If in our minds, which is where everything, the whole world is here in this mind, if in our mind we believe that somebody is happy or is prosperous or is sukhi, sukha, is experiencing sukha, then we interact with them in the form of friendliness, maitri. Okay, so we show friendliness towards such people that we think that we perceive them to be happy or prosperous and experiencing sukha. Karuna, compassion, empathy towards people that we think are undergoing misery, sorrow, experiencing suffering. Mudita, joy or happiness, to be happy when we believe that we have met somebody who is a very virtuous, noble, or a punyatma. Okay, we need to be very happy and joyous in our interaction with such people. Again, this is in our own mind. Okay, lastly, if we perceive somebody as not so virtuous, not so noble, then we interact and we behave with equanimity and to the point, to a certain extent, of indifference, upeksha. And it is such a wonderful formula Maharishi Patanjali has given. If we can adopt this and live it, then what happens? Then he says, you will have a clear chitta, the mind gets purified and there won't be disturbances in the mind, there will be clarity in the chitta. So, Maitri, Karuna, Mudita, Upeksha. These are the four qualities that we need to imbibe and we need to practice it in our daily living for our inner peace, so that our chitta gets purified, the mind gets purified, the brain fog, you know, the confusion in the mind is You have the clarity.
It is very, very interesting, because my next question was going to be that, you know, I was going to ask you, what do you do on a daily basis to help you stay clear in your mind, and so that you're focused or undisturbed by the external disturbances? You know, as a healer, you must be coming across, or you may be talking to so many people with so many different sorrows or worries or whatever miseries, but how do you stay clear of all of that and still experience this Maitreyi, Karuna, Bodhita and Upeksha?
So exactly what I told you, you know, and plus not only that, you know, our scriptures are so prescriptive. Again, Maharshi Patanjali has given us the Ashtanga Yoga. It is not just, you know, stretches and flexes and doing, you know, just the postures. It's more than that. It is an art of living. It's the science of living. How to live a fulfilled, meaningful, and a purpose-filled life. Okay. So once we go into deeper study of these scriptures and understand it, assimilate it, and live it, you know, all these things find its place. Okay. Now, very important, like you just said, you know, yes, I do come across, you know, many, many people who have enriched my life, you know. And one thing for sure is, you know, to be empathetic, to be compassionate, and be detached, with detachment. Okay. So again, if I apply this formula of Maitri, Karuna, Mudita, Upeksha, you know, Upeksha, of course, I have not come across that I have to have, but I have to have Upeksha. I have not come across that. And, you know, not even, yes. So I would say, you know, these three, you know, if we can practice this, it will really help in transcending, you know, these kinds of attachments. Okay. And practice of our Ashtanga Yoga. Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, and Samadhi. Okay. And again, once we can practice this, and if you add up all of the total of these virtues, it comes to 34. So precise, so precise. So this is what is required for us to unleash our innate potential to be empowered and to be our own leader. Because a good leader is one who has a clarity of the mind and has a mastery over one's own mind. Because after all, a leader has to influence others, isn't it? And that influence happens at the level of the mind. If I have mastery over my mind, then I can definitely be in a position of empowering and influencing. And the key to our mind, to mastering our mind, is nowhere else than right here, our breath. If we master our breath, nobody can steal the peace of our mind. Neither the PEAC peace nor a PIEC peace, both. Okay. So again, like I said, these are the practices I engage in. You know, I teach classes, I teach the asanas, I do pranayama, I do healing classes, I conduct workshops, I conduct seminars, I travel extensively all over, because I believe this is the science, art and science that we all need to be aware of for our own well-being, for our own inner peace. And if one person can be happy and peaceful from within, such a person exudes it. And when such a person exudes it, even the people around them also tend to become peaceful, right? You know, I'll just give you an instance. We had His Holiness Dalai Lama visiting Minnesota. So we have a stadium that can house about 3,500 people. It's an ice hockey stadium. So that is where his talk was organized. And there was a huge stampede over there, people trying to get into the stadium to participate in this talk. And as people were scrambling, you know, pushing and, you know, yelling and screaming, the moment the car came in which His Holiness Dalai Lama was seated, and the moment the car door opened and he stepped out, there was complete stillness. There was complete peace. There was complete silence. Yeah. Just the whole ruckus was just kind of quietened down. That is the power of peace that I'm talking about. And we all have that potential. Each one of us, the 7 billion people on this earth, we all have it. We have to unleash it. And this is where I feel we are all empowered. You know, we sit here and we wonder, you know, the war is going on, the pandemic is going on, you know, so many things are happening all over the world. You know, what can I do about it? There's a lot we can do about it. There's a lot we can do about it. We can pray, we can meditate, we can chant for peace. There are so many things, there's so much of power within us to bring about peace. That's what I would like to say.
Wonderful, wonderful. I could ask you so many more questions, and you could share your knowledge and wisdom that you have gathered over all these years. But unfortunately, like with all other good things, this also has to come to an end. But I would like to wrap this up with a few rapid fire questions, where I would like your answers to be in just one sentence, one word, one sentence. We'll keep it really rapid.
Sure, I'll try.
You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which one woman inspired you the most or continues to inspire you, and why?
I would still say it's my mother.
Okay. What is success according to you, and what success habits have you cultivated?
Success is living a meaningful, purpose-filled, and a fulfilled life. The highest joy and the highest success one can ever experiences in giving.
How could a self-employed woman develop leadership skills?
She only has to acknowledge her strengths from within, the infinite, invisible, divine energy that is there, the potential that is there. Tap into that. Draw from within, because what is within will be there always. Anything that comes from without will also vanish the way it comes in. So I say, draw from within.
What is the one core message that you received from your gurus or mentors or the people you look up to that has been your guiding light?
That we have infinite potential within each one of us, the power within. Never underestimate that. Tap into it. And life is fullest. And live life to the fullest and complete the purusharthas of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha.
Finally, what makes you happy?
Everything about life makes me very happy. I count my blessings every single day. I look everywhere and I see only blessings. That makes me very happy. If I can touch one person's per day. I feel very happy if I can help them in some way to live a meaningful life, a purpose-filled life. That makes me happy.
That's a very strong and noble statement coming from you, Premaji. I thoroughly enjoyed talking to you, understanding from you the different steps that each one of us can take to be a person of power, radiate that power for the global good. Thank you so much for joining us today for this podcast, The Impressive Empress, and we'll stay in touch.
Namaste. May the whole world enjoy health, happiness, peace, prosperity, wisdom, joy, contentment, and abundance.
Namaste.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, as you could see, Prema has devoted and dedicated her life to fulfill the vision and mission of Rishipat International Foundation, which is located at Bengaluru, India. She's committed to perpetually explore, propagate, and re-establish the path of life and living as seen, walked, and shown by the rishis globally. And this is in accordance with the Vedas in its authentic form. And hence, everyone can experience the ultimate and everlasting happiness, believes Prema. Salutations to such inspirers in our lives. Thank you so much for listening in. I hope you liked this conversation and found it inspiring. If you think this could help transform minds, please feel free to share this podcast widely in your networks. You can listen to the Impressive Empress podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, Podbean, Stitcher, TuneIn, JioSaavn, and Player FM. Got a question that you want me to ask our next guest? Do write to me at empress@bhogya.online, empress@bhogya.online. That's it for now. Bye until the next time, and take care.